And proceed to case number four, please. Kathy Quantock versus Shared Marketing.
May it please the court. My name is Joanne Kenoy, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Kathy L. Quantock. On January 24, 2001, Ms. Quantock was in the office of the president of the company she worked for, Mr. Rick Latanzio, to discuss a business matter. During that meeting, he complimented her on her work. He thanked her for the long hours that she'd been working, and he told her this would be her big year and that she would be getting a large raise. He then asked her for oral sex right there in the office. After she refused, he asked again for oral sex, and she refused. He then asked her to participate in a sexual threesome, and she refused. And finally, as she was leaving the office, he asked if she would provide phone sex for him, and she left. Later that day, Mr. Latanzio told her that the only thing that disappointed him about her was that she had not agreed to give him oral sex. 1 week later, after 6 years of employment, Quantock was demoted from the position of account supervisor to the position of account representative. Pursuant to the company's sexual harassment policy,
By her being demoted, did that decrease her pay?
No, her pay was not decreased.
Any of her other benefits affected?
No, not. There was not a financial loss. What happened was her title was taken away and her duties were significantly diminished. In her prior, and you can see this, and we've shown in the record the job.
But she received the same benefits and the same pay and everything.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Pursuant to the company's sexual harassment policy, Quantock reported the harassment to her immediate supervisor, Tim Rounds. Rounds told her he couldn't do anything because Mr. Latanzio was the president of the company. She reported the incident a second time to Rounds, and by his own admission, he did nothing.
Could you tell me how large this company is, or does it?
It's under 100. It's under 100.
Under 100 people.
I think it was more in the range of 50. These facts support substantial claims that must be resolved by a jury. The district court erred in entering summary judgment to the defendants on the basis of a one-page minute order issued just days after the final briefs were filed. The facts presented herein establish a classic quid pro quo sexual harassment claim. The district court's rejection of this claim was based solely on its erroneous determination that there had been no adverse action. There is no case law to support that when an employee is demoted from her supervisory position and relegated to duties that she had held before her previous promotions, with significant reduction in duties and responsibilities, that she has not suffered an adverse action. And that's exactly what happened here. The district court's conclusion that Quantock just suffered a reduction in her workload is simply not supported by the record, and at best relies on a reading of the facts that incorrectly draws every possible inference in favor of the defendant.
With regard to the hostile environment, there was no touching, at least alleged in this.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what we have are three vulgar requests made of her at that time. Nothing else, though, over that period. That was it.
No, there had been a history.
Well, I know it's a number of years ago that there was a request.
And there had been a touching incident at that time that she had tried to ignore because she wanted to stay.
How long ago was that?
It was several years before the
4 years or something?
Yes. Let me address the hostile environment claim. As you are aware, the lower court also summarily dismissed Quantock's hostile environment claim, holding that as a matter of law, that the harassment was not sufficiently severe or pervasive to support a claim under Title VII. The case has established that even a one-time occurrence, if sufficiently severe, can sustain a hostile environment claim, and that is our position here. The case law instructs us to look at the totality of the circumstances, and that means more than gauging the time that expires during the harassing event. And based on the distasteful facts presented here, and a jury could, and I suggest that a jury would, find that the work environment was inalterably poisoned by the president's actions on January 24th. The president's conduct essentially relegated Ms. Quantock to the equivalent of a prostitute. I mean, what kind of message is this? He says, yes, your work is great. Thanks for your commitment. Thanks for the hours. and helping this company to grow. But before you get compensated for that, I want you to come over here and perform oral sex. Quite frankly, I think that behavior of this kind, given the power relationship of the parties, essentially defines the words offensive, humiliation, and degradation. And it alters and, in fact, destroys the work environment forever for that woman.
How frequently did she have contact with him?
Frequently. It's a small office.
What does frequently mean? Does that mean two times a week or three times a
week?
You
mean how often did she see him?
Mm-hmm.
She probably, when he wasn't traveling, she probably...
She had contact with him, not when she saw him in the hall.
I would say more than at least once a week. And probably more at the small office.
Small office, but she had dealings with him, was, I guess, the thrust of my original question.
Yes, absolutely, on an ongoing basis, yes. And what I was saying, that I would suggest that any reasonable employee, man or woman, put in that situation, would perceive this environment to be hostile and abusive. And it establishes a violation of the very core protections established under Title VII. And the abuse and the hostility were further exacerbated in this case by the company's admitted refusal to even investigate her complaints of sexual harassment. Ms. Quantock has also presented sufficient facts from which a fact finder, and in this case we hope a jury, could determine that the company's rationale for demoting her were pretextual. There is no written documentation of any kind supporting the demotion. So the alleged rationales have evolved throughout the course of the litigation. And even more tellingly, there is no written documentation of any performance problems before January 24th. In fact, over the years, Ms. Quantock received exemplary performance reviews, and she was awarded for her performance and her dedication to the company. And there are more than sufficient facts in the record for a jury to conclude that the after-the-fact criticisms and the alleged rationales were false, and not the true motivation behind the demotion. For example, initially, Rick Latanzio, the president, told Quantock that she was being demoted because six employees threatened to quit because of her. That was a lie. Later, the defendants have modified their position to state that maybe one or two people threatened to quit. Plaintiff has presented sufficient evidence from which a jury could easily conclude that Mr. Latanzio's decision was not based on any threatened resignation. The lower court ignored those facts and just adopted, without explanation, defendant's contention that two people threatened to quit.
Did he make the decision, or was the decision made by a managerial group?
Okay, that goes to my next point, Your Honor, which is, defendant's theory is that a management team made the decision to demote Ms. Quantock several days after Buffy or Isabel Cornett threatened to quit. But what we have shown through the record is that that is not true, because on the very same day that Buffy Cornett told Rick Latanzio and his wife Brenda Latanzio that she wanted to quit, at the very same meeting, Rick Latanzio said, "Don't worry, kiddo, she won't be your supervisor by the end of the day." That is sufficient evidence to put in doubt the timing of the decision to demote her and who was involved in that decision. Because if Mr. Latanzio told Buffy Cornett on the same day that she resigned that Ms. Quantock was being demoted, then the meeting that took place 2 or 3 days later was not the time or place when that decision was made. And it's further corroborated by the testimony of Tim Rounds, who was Ms. Quantock's immediate supervisor, who told the plaintiff's husband that, hey, there was nothing we can do. Rick Latanzio had made up his mind before the meeting. So we think that we have put at issue, in a very substantial way, the timing of the decision and who made the decision.
They also argue that this was really not a disciplinary matter or a demotion. It was merely to ask that your client focus on particular projects. Therefore, she was relieved of some supervisory obligations in order to do that. They also claim that this was done by, in the case of other individuals sometimes.
Right. It had been done on a temporary basis for both Brenda Latanzio, who's the general manager, and Tim Rounds, but in neither of those situations had their title been taken away, and in neither of those situations had their role in the managerial group been suspended, and that's what happened with Ms. Quantock. So the parallels really don't apply.
Except, I mean, their assertion is that they, in this case, they simply relieved her of those duties in order to allow her to spend more time with another project. Did she introduce any evidence that shows that that's a lie?
Yes, that goes to the point of that they claim during the litigation that this was just a temporary move.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's really, besides for the musings of one witness, Brenda Latanzio, there's really nothing probative in the evidence to support that. My client was never told that this was a temporary move. No one in the business was told that this was a temporary move. And she, unlike the other two people that you've discussed, was stripped of her title, was stripped of her her office being her own office, okay, and was told that she would no longer be part of the management team. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, I think what I'd like to do is respond to a couple of the comments that were made during the plaintiff's argument. We believe that, first of all, there's nothing new by way of law. Judge Holderman didn't try to change the law. Judge Holderman followed what the Seventh Circuit has said in these types of cases. He followed what the Supreme Court has said in these types of cases. And what we have here is a single isolated incident, and we agree with counsel that we should look at all the circumstances. Some of the circumstances here are the plaintiff didn't just refuse on that one day when a couple of comments were made. When she was asked about oral sex, she said, "Your wife is two doors down the hall." When she was asked about phone sex, she said, "I only do that with my husband."
Well, how would you parry such remarks?
Otherwise? I would leave.
You would leave?
She could have left. In fact, she did leave after what she says was...
You don't think it's unusual to make that sort of parry to a remark like that, to try to keep your job and keep it light?
Well, she's reading in that try to keep your job. He never said...
I just said, I don't know who's trying to read it in. That was my question to you. Do you think she might have been trying to keep her job by pairing it and trying to keep it light?
She may have, which seems to me to also suggest that it is not sufficiently severe to meet the test of the Supreme Court and the Seventh Circuit cases, nor is it pervasive. We're talking about a one-time incident.
And what about the time 4 years earlier?
Well, that was 4 years earlier. This is not a continuous stream of conduct for a hostile environment claim.
I understand that. You're saying, though, that the three suggestions were not serious enough. They should have been taken sort of in what way? Just leave? That's it? Her responsibility to leave when a suggestion is made?
I don't know that I'd characterize it as her responsibility, but if what her parrying shows is that she was taking it lightly, it seems to me that...
Well, trying to take it lightly, I would say.
And it's also indicative as to what happened later. The reason she was in the office in the first place was because they were having a meeting with a major client 10 minutes later. After this brief conversation, she left the room, and then she proceeded to attend that meeting for the entire day. The president was there. She was there. Nothing indicated of anything untoward going on. So it's not just
that. You mean
that
you think that was all wiped out of her mind?
Not wiped out of her mind, but it wasn't so serious that it caused her any kind of immediate distress where she couldn't function. She was able to function that very day. And question came up about contact between the two of them, what was the regular basis. During that subsequent month, they barely had any contact at all because she was off for a kidney illness some of the time. He was off traveling some of the time. So there was no occasion, or barely an occasion, for them to even see each other, nor does she claim that there was anything that was followed up. And when you have a quid pro quo, presumably you actually, you know, ask something in return for something. He didn't ask anything in return for. In fact, as the testimony goes, the testimony about the raise came first. And
you don't believe there could be some inference when the president of the company suggests to have sexual relations with an employee that there might be some quid pro quo can be inferred?
I suppose, yes, that is possible. I think
if it is possible, then why shouldn't a jury determine it?
Because there, for two reasons. There was no adverse job action here, which is required for a quid pro quo. Yes, she was given some, what we could say, lesser responsibilities for a period of time. This was a small company. It was 50 employees or less. There were fluid responsibilities between many people, and the company had a need to serve its accounts. And what they decided, and what was the management team, what the management team decided was she has shown that she was good at servicing individual accounts. Unfortunately, she had not done very well in managing people. So they chose in that period to say, look, we need help. We have problems with accounts.
Why did he tell her what an outstanding job she was doing? Immediately prior to these vulgar propositions.
There's no explanation in the record of what he meant by a good job. She did, in fact, do a good
what
job.
What would you think it was?
Well,
if your superior said to you, you're doing a very fine job, you're going to get a raise. Now, you're trying to say that he didn't, there's no explanation as to what that meant? Was she supposed to cross-examine him?
Well, what I'm saying is from the record, there's no explanation. And it's consistent with why, she was doing a good job.
Why doesn't that raise a jury question as to the as to whether or not the estimation of her performance very very soon thereafter is simply a pretext, simply a lie?
Well,
I talk out of both sides of his mouth.
Well, first of all, I don't believe he did because he was talking. He didn't say, you know, you're doing a great job across the board.
Is that what he had to say? Is that
what I'm saying?
Now you're telling us that that's what he had to say?
No,
You're doing a good job across the board?
No, I'm saying he didn't spell that out so that we don't have an inconsistency between what he said. We also have other things. We have the employees who complained about her and two of whom threatened to quit. That's separate from other facts. We also have a client who called.
And when did they do that?
Over a period of time.
Then why did he offer it? Why did he tell her the outstanding job that she was doing and she was going to get an increase in pay if he had knowledge of all this?
Because overall, that he was contributing.
The more you talk, the more you're convincing me that this is a proper jury case.
Well, what we have here is we have clients who called meetings, one client who specifically called a meeting on January 29th and Kathy Quantock's was in that meeting and knew that the client was disappointed with the performance, and the company acted on that. We have other employees who complain, and we have Kathy Quantock herself who came to the president and the management and said, you know, I have too much on my plate. I can't do all of this. I can't work all these nights. I can't work all these weekends.
When did she say that?
She said that within a couple of weeks of the time of this January 24th meeting. And I believe even at the January 24th meeting, this was contemporaneous. She was saying to the employer, I can't do everything. And the employer came up with a solution which she doesn't like. What she wanted was to have a bunch of other people employed so she could supervise them. Instead, they made a decision, we still have an important job for you. We have significant clients who need to be served. We're asking you for now to deal with those significant clients. If there are no more questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Your time is up. We will give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll just make two short comments. One is as to the subjective prong of the hostile environment claim. The record is replete with the intense discomfort and anguish and humiliation that my client suffered as a result of this. She did not take this lightly.
Pardon me?
She did not take this lightly, in any manner or form. And the other point, that just referring to what counsel talked about, is that she never requested a demotion. She begged Mr. Latanzio to hire additional staff so that she could fulfill her supervisory duties.
And when did she ask for that, please?
Several times in the months before this happened.
Prior to this incident,
yes.
Not after it.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, he did authorize her before she was harassed to start hiring additional staff, 10 to 15 people, and he trusted her sufficiently enough to do those hirings. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your argument as well. We will proceed to